News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807, 7 after 8 o'clock on Mobile Mornings with the Mallory Piping text line at 251-343-0106, Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, and also the Advocate and some newspapers in Louisiana as well as our guest.
Hey, good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys.
So Dalton, your favorite team is?
Oh, the Titans, Tennessee Titans, yeah.
And I think I'm kind of I've been here almost, a long time. So I think, I didn't have a big love for the Atlanta Falcons when I was in Georgia, but so I kind of adopted the Saints. So, I'm a fan, and I'm not the craziest fan.
You don't live and die by them.
I don't live and die by them, but I watch them every Sunday when they're playing, and watch their one after another 500 records, basically. But Quinn, you are a super fan. This had to be a big surprise what happened with the retirement of the quarterback over the weekend, I guess.
Yeah, this was a massive surprise. Most fans considered him a little bit of a money grubber, but here he's leaving $30 million on the table, because if he'd wanted, he could have just said, well, I'm going to try to rehab this for a full year. And if he tries to rehab it for a full year, the Saints are on the hook for another $30 million. And instead, he did what was actually the classy thing, and he said, look, it looks like I'm not going to play again, and so I'm going to announce it to the world. And he still got paid $10 million, but he's leaving $30 million on the table that he could have had if he had,
coerced to take a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Not that I'm not classy, but
you're nothing but class.
I would spend a year in a full body cast for an extra $30 million. So that is, you're right. That's for Carr to do that.
And I would help you go to the bathroom.
Thank you.
For my cut.
I'd have to give you, definitely a cut of the money. But Quinn, now that leaves, a young quarterback room. You've got back-to-back-to-back drafts, and now Hayner, Rattler, and Shuck. That sounds like a construction crew that's going to build the I-10 bridge here over the next couple years.
And then the I-10
Hayner,
bridge
Rattler, Shuck, and apparently Decker.
Oh.
Hunter Decker, who was kicked out of college for gambling. And it looks like they're about to sign him today, and he's a superb athlete. This is going to be really interesting, but I'm telling you, I looked at what for me is a lot of video of Tyler Shuck, and this kid can play. And he's not so much a kid anymore.
Yeah, he's 25, right? Yeah,
he'll be 26 by the time season starts. I think the Saints actually have themselves a good one.
In Shuck, the kid from Louisville. Where was he before that? Was on the West Coast, or he's been bouncing around?
He's been around a lot.
Yeah.
But he had injuries that were not the kind that sort of linger with you like a bad knee or something like that.
Snapped his collarbone twice, right?
Yeah, exactly. And assuming those are healed, then he should be fine. And he's very smart. He's very hardworking. And he's got a phenomenal arm and really good touch as well.
We're going to get into politics here in a second, but can you give me a little background on Mr. Hunter Decker, who I've never heard of in my life, despite the fact that I watch college football like someone who's insane.
Yeah.
Where he went to college, and what are the charges against him?
Gambling, huh?
I forgot where he went. He was supposed to be a real hot shot, and then he got caught gambling, and so he got disqualified from playing college, and he's been waiting for a chance. He's a superstar athlete. He runs a 4.56 40, and he's got a really strong arm. And that's about all I know about him.
Interesting. All right. Well, he's the one that's got my attention right there. Let's move on to politics.
Yeah, let's get into some politics here. And a story from this past week. It wasn't really discussed a whole lot. We talked about it a short bit here on the morning show, but it was kind of just an affirmation of earlier rulings, and that's that these congressional districts. Well, the district map that was drawn up by the Republican State House in 23. Is that when they drew it up? The appeals court or the court this last week said, yeah, that map isn't going to fly and wasn't going to fly, and you're stuck with the way the districts are now through 2030. You said this is a mark on Marshall. Kind of explain that.
Okay. Well, this was a reaffirmation of the earlier ruling, but it was more than that. I mean, these judges were angry. Yeah. I have been reading and writing about court cases for decades. I've read hundreds and hundreds of court decisions.
I thought that was strange how direct they were. That was something else.
Well, this was one of the most scathing judicial decisions I've ever read. And look, I don't agree with them on everything. In fact, they kept saying that the only thing that could explain the legislature doing this was racial animus, which was BS.
Yeah.
Because they could have been looking for just partisan advantage without racial considerations. There's lots to get into where I think the court was wrong. But here's where the court was right. The Supreme Court and the local courts had been absolutely clear about what was needed, and the legislature completely ignored them, thumbed their nose at them, stuck a finger in their eye, whatever metaphor you want to use. And they did so because Attorney General Steve Marshall and the Solicitor General basically told them, this is the only thing that we're going to let you do. I mean, you can go and do it, but we're not going to defend anything unless you do it our way. And they insisted that they knew better, that they were going to be able to go up to the Supreme Court and get all this overturned. And in doing so, they infuriated the judges so much that this is what they did, and nobody's paying attention to it.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, Quinn, and this has been going on for a few years, that first kind of court date where the state started arguing its case that those maps should have been okay, I don't know if it was underprepared or folks were just kind of shocked at the argument that they took, but basically wasn't the state saying, and you kind of laid it out there, the state was saying, no, we don't have to make these districts according to any kind of racial consideration because that's against the law and the Supreme Court will prove that out. When maybe if they had gone in and said, hey, we're doing our best to make these maps fit what you're asking us to, this is as good as we can get. Was that kind of the difference in the arguments they could have made?
That's a pretty good way to describe it. I mean, they got their hat handed to them at oral argument. They got their hat handed to them at every single intermediate decision. But here's what has not been widely reported. But if you read the decision, and this should ruin Steve Marshall's career. Not that it shouldn't have been ruined anyway for other things that Rob Holbert talks about. But the court was so angry and thinks that the state is being so disobedient that they are having a May 28th hearing to decide whether the state has to go back under what's known as preclearance.
Hmm.
And what that means is they cannot do anything having to do with redistricting. They cannot make any redistricting decision without first going to the Justice Department to get the Justice Department Civil Rights Division to pre-clear it, to say, okay, basically you've got to say, Mother, may I, to the Justice Department Civil Rights Division. And the Justice Department Civil Rights Division can micromanage, can make all sorts of other demands, can delay. I mean, it's worse than having to go through the courts. And once you're in preclearance, it takes a lot to get out, and it's a black mark on the state.
Mm-hmm.
It costs the state a lot of money. It could cost the state all sorts of rigmarole. It could throw our elections into chaos, basically, coming in the next decade. It's a very, very bad thing to have to go through preclearance again. And this court, by making us go through preclearance, is really putting the onus on us, and it's all Attorney General Steve Marshall's fault and the fault of the legislature for listening to him. But he laid down the law, as it were, using the vernacular, and said, "This is what we are going to do, and this is how we're going to do it." And he's now got the state behind an eight ball.
And I've seen this threat, or not so much. Well, I guess it is a threat, but it's been compared to the threat of the feds putting the Alabama prisons under federal receivership. So it's already kind of embarrassing that you have to have almost like parent walk you across the street with hand in hand. But it would be a different story if it's like a Republican DOJ compared to a Democrat president's DOJ. So I'm sure, but the next time this would become an issue would be 2030, right? I mean, they're not going to look at this any further? Or what does the timeline look from here, Quinn? Do you know?
Well, unless the legislature tries to change it again, which would be just incredibly stupid, but then unless the legislature does it before 2030 for some other weirdly concocted reason, it would be after the 2030 census, and we don't know who's going to be controlling the Justice Department then. And if the left is controlling the Justice Department then Steve Marshall's, you know, "I'm smarter than you" could really, really end up hurting not just the state, but also hurting his own party.
Marshall's obviously also, besides his temperament or style, which obviously you were not a fan of, I wouldn't say, I don't know. I'm gonna careful using my description of Steve Marshall. I don't know the man, but in some areas and in certain times, he seems like he is full of himself a little bit, I guess I would say. But he's got political ambition, and at this point, don't you think it's the U.S. Senate that he's hedging toward? He's taken himself out of the governor's race.
So, Quinn, Marshall, it's clear he still has political aspirations beyond the office he currently holds. Senate seems to be the one most people are connecting him to. But you're saying his career should be over after this. So we know it's not.
Well, if the state does indeed get put back into preclearance, and if there is any opponent who can even come close to explaining just how bad that is, that should ruin his political career. Hmm. But then again, all they have to do to run a campaign against him is to take a whole bunch of the Lanyap stories about how unethical Marshall has been, or how he has certainly looked the other way when there's terrible unethical stuff going on, and that should ruin his career too.
Yeah, you know, it would have to ruin it. To ruin a career, people have to be paying attention enough to see that it should ruin a career. Some of these politicians, you got to bury them two or three times before they kind of go away.
Yeah.
I don't know if Marshall's that kind of guy or not. You know, people aren't paying attention.
Well, you got to bury him two or three times, except in this case, what he has done, it's not just like some personal peccadillo or something. We're talking about hurting the public weal, hurting the interest of the public itself.
Sure.
And again, go back to what Rob Hubbard and Lanyap have reported on him over the last several years.
Okay.
But don't you think, I mean, Marshall, he's catching his arrows here, but the legislature holds a pretty big part in this story, right? That I don't think they should be completely left out of the story of how this map was drawn and where we stand now.
Well, that's true. Look, the white knight in all of this is our local legislator, Chris Pringle, who was head of the House Committee on Redistricting, and he begged and pleaded with the state Senate not to listen to
Marshall,
to Attorney General Marshall.
Yeah.
He begged and he pleaded, and you know, he came up with a plan that at least tried to comply with the courts, and they ignored him, and they went with exactly what Marshall demanded. They did not have to do that. The state Senate did it. Mm-hmm. And the state Senate should answer as well.
Quinn, when we get back, I know you want to talk about one of the local issues, and it's a local issue that many of us have on different roads, but some of the drainage problems we have when we get big rain, like we saw again this weekend. We'll talk about that when we get on the other side, Quinn.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems like we don't get rain. We only get big rain. That's been the problem, I think. It's 8:21, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings. 251-343-0106. The Mallory Piping text line is there for you. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8:26. So maybe there's a rain shower, and then I'm heading from my apartment down to a grocery store in Midtown, and suddenly I've got to turn around, Cam. Quinn, we're going to have Cam Morrison on here in just a moment. And that's what you wanted to talk about, that on Old Shell Road, right?
Yeah, look, this has been a problem for as long as I've been in Mobile, but that train, the train track that has a bridge and Old Shell Road goes down and under it.
Yep.
Every time there's a rain, it floods. This time, for about 3 days, there were 6 or 8 feet of water still stuck there. That's such an obvious problem, has been for so long.
Yeah.
It just astonishes me that there has not been an administration that will fix it. And, you know, I'm a big fan of the Simpson administration, but they've been in office for more than 11 years. And while they did they used a grant to do a very nice beautifying project there.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
They haven't fixed the drainage, and they haven't said anything about the drainage. And I think they owe the public a report. What is wrong with the drainage? Why can't they fix it? And what is their plan to move forward? Because it is absolutely untenable to have what's basically a semi-major artery get blocked up every time there's a major rain.
And also, it's
inexcusable.
If one school is affected more than others, it's definitely UMS Wright, because it's nearly at the campus of UMS Wright. And I think Sandy knows a little bit about that school. So it's kind of crazy.
Exactly. I mean, why can't they fix it? And why don't they at least talk about it and explain to people? I mean, if there's some major problem, I mean, yes, I get it. There's a big dip in the road. But if you look where the catch basin is, it's a third of the way above where the lowest point of the dip is. That makes no sense. it makes absolutely no sense. Go in, dig it up, fix the pipe, and get the problem solved.
Quinn, have you thought about getting maybe a taller vehicle? Is that
yeah, you would need a vehicle about 15 feet high or bigger than that. I mean, literally there was 6 to 8 feet of water there for 3 days.
Oof.
Yeah, and that,
is this the one they just redid long ago?
They didn't do anything about the ditch and the dip, but they did make quite
make it look nicer.
It really is beautiful, but that is ironic.
Yeah, they've done a great job. It was a small grant specifically for a beautification project, and they did that. But now, I mean, at some point, they might have to rip that whole thing up if they ever want to actually fix the drainage, you know?
Yeah, more times than I can count, I've gone through the light, and suddenly everybody's turning around, and I'm like, oh, that again. Okay, I get it. I just have always assumed it's not an easy fix, or a very expensive fix. I don't know.
Well, maybe it is, but, I mean, they've had, Lord knows this city has had a lot of tax money coming in over the last 11 years, and they haven't even said turkey boo about it in public.
Quinn, appreciate your time. Let folks know once again, if they want to follow you online, how they can do that.
Go to QuinnHillier.com or Google Quinn Hillier and NOLA.com.
Got it, man. Thanks, and we'll talk again in 1 week. You got it.
Quinn Hillier.
He was mad about that dip.
Yeah, mad about the dip. Stay off Old Shell. We're coming back with Cam Marston. Many of you know him from What's Working and a whole lot more around this station. There he is. We'll talk with him right after the news.
With SRN News, I'm Greg Clugston in Washington.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8:34 on Mobile Mornings.
Do this before we talk with Cam Marston. He'll be joining us here in just a minute. I want to get through some of the text on the Mallory Piping text line. So many of you have said, what's up this morning, Michael? So a lot of people ripping Quinn for the Old Shell standing water issue there under the train tracks there. Michael, he added, after getting after Quinn, he said, the NAIA Tennis National Championship is going on at the Tennis Center. It's always surprising how many huge events go on there. That's one right after the other. I think that place just stays booked through the spring months.
That's a really big one there. I had the opportunity to emcee the awards banquet, I think is going to come up on Sunday night in the past, and they're great athletes, and they're from everywhere. NAIA schools actually recruit kids from all over the world, Europe, South America. So, yeah.
And they're right here. Yeah. David said, there is a fix for that Old Shell Road flooding problem. The city has purchased land behind Sage Park to act as a spillover pond. Floodwater will be pumped into that reservoir. Another texter here said, I thought they put, this is Mob Dog, I thought they put in pumps and more drainage with this recent project. So a lot of folks commenting on what Quinn said there. Matt says, morning, guys. The problem with Steve Marshall is the same problem with Twinkle Kavanaugh and a few other state politicos. They tried to talk about national issues more than they worry about the state issues.
Yeah, you know, Marshall's always signing on with other AGs for national issues.
Yeah and joining lawsuits. They tried talking about national issues more than they worry about the state issues and working on our own problems. They always use a national platform for their reelection, and Alabama's been naive enough to reelect them every time. That's the text from Matt. And one more of this texter here says, don't forget that Steve Marshall was still a Democrat during the Obama administration. 251-343-0106 if you want to jump on the Mallory piping text line. But now it's time to talk with a good friend of ours here at FM Talk 106.5. We've seen him around the building, held great conversations with him, and it's been years and years and years of that, and now he's back. Cam Marston.
I'm great. I'm glad to be here. Thank you. Good morning to you both.
So good to see you.
I've got a brother who's a behavioral scientist up at Lehigh University.
Yeah.
One of the things he told me when I was a pretty young guy, because he was really smart, and he was smart enough to look at me and know he's not very smart. So he was patient with me, and he would say, Danny, the most interesting people are the most interested people. So if you can become interesting when you're interested.
Yes.
And that's what you've made almost a career out of. You're interested in what other people do, their processes, their businesses, their personalities, whatever drives them and gets them to the top of their field. And you've talked to so many of those people. You've got so much knowledge stored up through those interviews. It's time for you to kind of do your own thing. Huh?
You're right. And that's what kind of led to what we're doing now. It was so the What's Working show existed for either 7 or 8 years. Either way.
I always loved it.
And loved meeting these people from across the country and getting to know their stories. Over that time, through osmosis, gradually picked up what made them successful. And it was last year in California where a client of mine, a hospital system, says, Cam, how do we get deeper into this? So I go out and I give these presentations on workplace trends. And they typically, I'm going to pat my own back, they go well. People like them. I wouldn't have been doing it for 25 years had it not gone well. And they say, well, what's the next chapter? How do we get deeper into this? And I thought, well, I don't really have an answer to that. And I spent a year thinking, what is the answer? Well, the answer is this course that I'm here to talk about, which is a 2.5-day deep dive into inner workplace communication skills. And not just inner workplace, but external to the workplace as well. But how do I get better at communicating what I think and feel and believe and what I need people to do to the colleagues and people around me?
Uh-huh.
So this workshop focuses on spoken communication, both one-to-many as well as one-to-one or one-to-a-few, like you and the three of us are doing here.
Uh-huh.
How to ask questions. What are the best questions I can ask you, Dalton, that will make you excited to do something, that will make you want to take responsibility for a change in yourself? So it's leadership through communications, through asking questions. We teach people how to coach. Mm. How do I coach the people around me? And it's all a part of the, as well as how do I write? What do I need to know in composing an email about the person to who I'm sending the email to that will make them receptive to the message? And I've gathered this over the 7 or 8 years of doing the program, of the speeches and the interviews, and have tried to boil it down. And you would think, well, 2.5 days, you didn't boil it well enough.
No, I think you have.
2.5 days of what I describe as intense, thorough, but fun learning.
Yeah.
That takes these people who have, there's only, classes are limited to 14 people. Mm-hmm. It's really small. Takes them from an awareness of what their deficiencies may be to sending them out at noon on Friday after 2.5 days going, and they're thinking, and this has been the feedback thus far, I can't wait to give this stuff a shot.
Mm.
I can't wait to give this a try. I'm now excited in a way for my workplace than I haven't been in a long, long time.
Yeah.
Let's try these things. I'm very proud of it. And the feedback thus far has been, frankly, and I would just be very candid, better than what I thought it would be. I'm like going, oh gosh, I thought it was good, but I didn't think it was this good. That's great news.
And that's interesting. And you've had so many great conversations. And like you've said, over the years, you've had a focus, kind of a macro focus on workplace trends,
yes,
on trends in business. And when you think of who's focused on the trends, it's usually the decision makers, the founders, the CEOs, that nature. But when you're talking leadership, that's top down. So are you talking to just the hiring, the people who do the hiring, the managers? Are you talking all down to some of the middle managers?
No, it's a good question. The course is created for mid-level managers, but it doesn't exclude anyone. So if you were to say to me, Cam, who should I send? Send me somebody who's got some growth potential in your organization and they need some work, some refinement. And those people work very well with me. Send me somebody who is eager for what their next step in their career may be, but your organization just doesn't have a spot for them in that next step yet. But you want to acknowledge them in some way and say, listen, we see you. Mm-hmm. We know you got growth potential and we're going to help you get ready for that. Send me somebody that's new to sales, that's trying to figure out how to develop rapport with customers and communicate what's important about their stuff to them. Mm-hmm. And that's a person that I can truly work with. So it's not just for the hiring manager. It's not just for the top level leadership, though we've had both come through. The sweet spot is that mid-career person who sees opportunity in him or herself, or someone sees that opportunity in them and says, I think we're going to add some polish here. Yeah. And with this polish, we think you're going to be able to accelerate once you get into that next level.
One of the things you mentioned that really got my attention was the words that you use in an email, the words that you use when you're addressing someone. All this stuff matters more than, you know, you have to be very intentional on how you present your thoughts. People can take it one way when you meant it the other way.
I learned this very recently, and this was an aha moment that I hadn't anticipated. People read an email or a text in the mood that they're in.
Yeah. Mm.
So if I'm in a good mood, I'll read your text with a good tone. If I'm in a bad mood, Dan, you've sent me a neutral text, but if I'm in a bad mood, I read it in a bad tone.
Wow.
Therefore, if this is true and the communicator knows it, is it his or her responsibility to frame that text or that email the way it's meant to be? And I've reacted to this and I can't believe I'm doing this because I didn't think it was necessary until I've learned what I've learned. And that is, if I'm sending an email in the last 10 days, this is since I've learned this, I will preface the email with the tone of the email. Good morning! Exclamation point. Good afternoon is something. I want that reader to feel my tone. And the same is true in the text. Secondarily, and this is something that we work on in the course in detail, we know, or I know through my research, is that if I'm dealing with somebody that's roughly under 30 years, let's say under 40 even, their vision of the world is them and their future. If I'm emailing somebody that's over 40, their vision of world is me, the sender, in my background. So what do I know versus what is going to happen to you? So as I'm constructing messages to my team, and this is both spoken and written, let me talk to you about your first future versus let me talk about me and the research that I've done, which is the nucleus of what I'm trying to communicate.
Right.
Oftentimes there'll be a mix of audiences, so we mix the messages here. And that's something we work on in the course in terms of spoken. If I'm giving you a review and you're 25, my review needs to be framed with you and your future in mind. If I'm giving you a review and you're 45, your review needs to be framed with, here's what I've learned that will help you. And these little things make that recipient of the message, they don't stand up and say, thank you for talking to me like an under 45-year-old. They simply say, I like him.
Yeah.
I like her. They get me. They truly have my best interests in mind. Mm-hmm. And these are small things that leaders often say, I shouldn't have to do this. Well, maybe not. Only if you want to be effective. Only if you want to increase your efficacy. And we're going to push the participants in the course through these messages and these learnings. And I use the word intense, and I should find a different word. But it's really fun.
Yeah.
It's really fun when you learn things. You get excited about trying them.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's what we do.
I love it.
Yeah. And you know, there's probably people out there that they're like, oh, you're a nerd. You want to go learn to be a leader? But I could see how that would be so exciting, especially if you're in a position, or maybe you want to be in a position in a company where you get that responsibility, where you can be the one who you know, leads a team to something they wouldn't have been able to do without you. And just having extra tools in the tool belt, because, I mean, when it comes down to it, there have been so many people before you who have already figured out how to do that, and these are the people you've learned from, and you can pass that along.
Right. I think there's a pride element that some people just feel like this is warm fuzzy, this is pat on the back, you shouldn't need to do this, and that's fine. You're not, well, you won't find my course fun or helpful, but there are people who say, there's more in me to give, there's more in me to explore. Those are the people who are going to thrive in the course, because they're willing to take feedback. They're willing to admit what they don't know.
They're interested.
They're interested
in getting better.
And they see opportunity for themselves. Yeah. And those are the people, you know, I look back on 7, 8 years of what's working. Those people on the show were people who had curiosity about themselves and what they're capable of. No one ever was on my show who felt that they were a finished product.
Right.
I'm done. I'm cooked. I'm good. Those people don't show up on my radar. Those people don't show up on any radars, frankly. They're in the background. And if that's where they want to be, that's fine. My course isn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. It's for the people who are curious about themselves. What am I capable of? What's possible for me? How can I get better? And baby, those people rule the world.
Yeah, we're talking with Cam Marston. You're hearing here recently and going forward more of Cam's 90-second insights. What have you titled that kind of 90 seconds throughout the day we get some of these insights from you, which are great?
What's working business tips.
Working business tips. And those are great. And many of you know Cam well, but right now we're talking about this leadership seminar and how great it can be for your business. I'm sure folks are fired up to send their employees out there with the hope that they'll improve their business for them. But what you've talked to so many people over the years, so many great leaders. I'm sure some, it's like we don't all come out with a Randy Johnson fastball, right? There's only a few people in the world that could do that. So there are some leaders that the way they lead, only they can do it that way. But your insights over all of these, I'm sure leaders have pretty general qualities. Like what are maybe the top few qualities that you say, okay, now that person is a leader. What is it that makes someone a leader, or can you even boil it down like that?
Well, I think there's some broad ranges, and you're right. Not everybody is a Steve Jobs, a supernatural talent at what he did. Not everybody is a, you know, regardless of what you think on Elon Musk has some remarkable talents, or Da Vinci. But most of the leaders that I've worked with are very self-reflective. What did I do well? What did I do poorly? If I could do it again, how would I do it differently? Most of the leaders that I've interviewed on the show are very clear on what their skill set is. And rather than trying to explore where they're bad in making that better, they say, my strengths are this. I'm going to maximize these things. I'm going to push them to the limits and find people to help me with my weaknesses. So they recognize their strengths. They're very self-reflective. What do I do well? They're good at gathering teams and getting the teams to help them with the strengths, kind of what we were just talking about now.
Right.
So they're good at finding good people and letting them do their job. You've heard these things before. But I find that the leaders, more often than not, what I like about them is the fact that you ask them questions and they can tell you how they learned the lesson, which means they're self-reflective. They understand their history and the mistakes that they've made. And I find those people, the last thing I'll say, what they have in common, they have a vulnerability that they're not afraid to hide. I've made mistakes. I've done this. I've done that.
Humble.
That's exactly right. They're humble about their mistakes, and they make them, to me, likable people.
Mm-hmm.
When you can say, I've done poorly and I made a mistake here, suddenly you become endearing to the people you say that to. And it's really refreshing. And again, you say 50 shows a year for the past 7 or 8 years, that's a lot of things that people have in common.
Yeah.
And those are the lessons that I've tried to internalize and get through to this 2.5-day course.
How does somebody that would like to be at your, or if they would like to send somebody from their organization to make sure that they are there, tell us about how they contact you and get that going, and how many seminars are on the way.
So we've got one more scheduled in August. We're going to evaluate things at that point. We've got a June one scheduled, 11th through the 13th, and you can go to cammarston.com/GICA, the Generational Insights Communications Academy. So cammarston.com/GICA, we've got, I think, 10 or 11 signed up for the June course. There's 3-4 more slots available. And then we got one coming up in August. You can go there. There's a place to contact me on that webpage, and you're welcome to email or call me. You can find all my contact information at cammarston.com. Love to talk to you about it. I say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek. If you want to call and talk about the course, be aware that I like to talk about the course.
Yeah, you're going to get sold and oversold, but you're probably, from that point on, be on board.
Yeah. Also, Cam, let folks know, speaking engagements, you still do that, but or maybe not, but podcast, you still roll that out.
We still do the work. What's Working podcast. Since we left the radio broadcast side of it, the pace is a little bit different.
Yeah.
I don't miss the deadlines, but the pace is a little bit different, and it allows a greater exploration with the guest. We're no longer limited to the time constraints of the radio. So, yeah, we still do the podcast. You can find that on your favorite podcast app. And, yeah, the presentations continue. I'm headed to Wisconsin Dells tomorrow to talk to the Wisconsin Healthcare Association or something like that, and then out to California next week. So those are still going on, but we've added this 2.5-day course to it's an itch I wanted to scratch. It's a need I've found in the marketplace, and I'm very fond of it. I'm very proud of it, candidly.
Yeah, I mean, you're excited about it, obviously, and I'm excited for you. I think it's awesome.
Thank you very much. And, appreciate it,
best
gentlemen.
Of luck with it.
All right, y'all check out cammarston.com, and we appreciate Cam coming in. It's always good to see an old friend. Mobile Mornings, we'll wrap it up on the other side of 1819 News, 251-343-0106, if you want to hop in on the Mallory Piping text line. Thanks, Kane. 856 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. This segment brought to you by Tobias and Comer Law, the local personal injury law firm. And I want to thank Desi Tobias for coming in again yesterday. And we were talking about National Boating Safety Week, which is coming up later this month. And reminder, ToBiasComerLaw.com. They have some really good videos. Brian Comer with Tobias and Comer took a ride on a boat and had Aaliyah Marine Patrol board his boat, and they videoed it to show you what it's like in a stop and what all you need on your person and on your craft in order to, well, make it through one of those stops and have everything you need. Now, and I know that Aaliyah Marine Patrol, a bit of a controversial subject around these parts here over these last few weeks, but it still helps to know what you need in case you get pulled over on the water. Plus, just being safe out there and making sure that you're not a statistic when you're out there just trying to have a good time. So National Boating Safety Week coming up later this month. And for some more of that information, check out ToBiasComerLaw.com. Of course, they don't just work maritime injuries and recreational water activity injuries. They do a lot more than that. They'll guide you through your case from the first time you talk until it's all over. Car accidents, defective products, workplace accidents, Tobias and Comer Law, that's who you need to call. 251-432-5001, ToBiasComerLaw.com.
Trump in the Middle East trying to pull up a $1 trillion deal. That sounds easy enough.
A few trillion. I think he said this morning a couple million American jobs are on the line on this trip.
Okay, we'll see how all that plays out. Coleman Daily's Sam Roberts is going to be a guest on the Jeff Poore Show. Former U.S. Rep. Parker Griffith, kind of the Democrat voice. And speaking of the voice of a party, LGOP Chairman John Wall, also a guest on the Jeff Poore Show straight ahead.
So they're working on that exit, that rest stop up in Huntsville before you get, or just after you pass the Tennessee line, whichever direction you're headed. A new Saturn 1B rocket replica is one step closer for that Ardmore exit on 65. State Rep Andy Witt said the U.S. Space and Rocket Center is the top candidate to oversee its design and construction. So they're going to try to put another rocket up there.
All
you don't
right.
want to miss that. And I was thinking, is there any other landmark? I've peed near that thing so many times there at that rest stop. It's saved many a road trip.
I hope it was inside a restaurant.
It was.